Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Voice of the Cape, Drive Time, welcome back to the show. It's the Free Book Friday part of the show. Later on, we will be giving away a free copy of this book entitled Nelson Mandela and Mandla Langa, who did the writing based on manuscripts, Dare Not Linger, The Presidential Years. And it's published by Macmillan, and it is available at a bookstore near you. The author, Mandla Langa, born in Durban, we'll forgive him for that. He became part of the struggle in 1976 generation, went into exile, Botswana, Mozambique, Angola, Hungary, Zambia, United Kingdom, where he was the ANC's cultural representative. Mr. Mandla Langa is a well-respected writer and journalist, the first South African to be awarded the Arts Council of Great Britain's bursary for creative writing. He's been a columnist for the Sunday Independent, The New Nation, author of several acclaimed novels, and of course he also won the 2009 Commonwealth Prize for the best book in the African region. It goes on and on. But Mr. Mandla Langa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me to the show. And I want to greet the listeners in Western Cape.
And they all greet you back, and they're all excited to hear about the writing of this particular book. In the prologue to the book, Grasha Michelle, Madiba's wife, late Madiba's life, actually makes the point that Mr. Mandela, in his retirement years, was already making notes for a follow-up to his previous book. And unfortunately, due to old age and other factors, he never quite got there, but that there were 10 basic chapters. And then you were thrown into the mix. What were your feelings when you heard that you were going to be commissioned to write this particular book?
Well, it was with a sense of pride and also a sense of nervousness, I would say, but mainly I was humbled by being chosen to write this book because, as you well know, Nelson Mandela was the world's and still is the world's most revered, iconic political figure.
And one thing that comes out quite profoundly in the book, you've brought it out quite well, is Mandela's humanity, his sense of humanity, and his amazing ability to listen to so many people when South Africa is a place of a million moving parts, and yet he just seemed to manage to find time to listen to so many voices.
Mm. Well, Nelson Mandela's major preoccupation from the time in prison up until the time he was the leader of the ANC and the leader of the country was to make sure that he ushered in a very stable democracy. So in that process, he depended also and he listened to as many people as possible because his form of leadership was a listening leadership.
Indeed, and I mean, there's a sort of a funny part in the book where you mention the late Walter Sisulu saying, "Hey, this man phones me at 2-3 o'clock in the morning for advice when in fact he's already got the answer."
Yes. In fact, there were two people whose word he really trusted, and that was Walter Sisulu and the late Oliver Tambo, whose centenary was celebrating this month. Those were the two people he really listened to, but he sought advice and counsel from a vast selection of humanity because he wanted to represent as many different voices and, you know, constituencies as possible.
One thing that comes, jumps off the pages is that, do you think the average South African, even today, understands the challenges that Madiba faced in those days, how he had to deal with the traditional leaders who didn't sometimes quite buy into the whole vision, the IFP, dealing with the generals who only at the last minute basically backed down from trying to undergo a coup. Challenging times.
Absolutely. You will see that what he did was to make sure that he spoke to people he trusted or he knew to be part of the movement to help him create this democracy. So in that circumstance, he would speak to the leaders, even though sometimes their views were not in sync with his own. And of course, Chief Mangosuthu Buthelezi, then, who's now Prince Buthelezi, they had a lot of debates about how to chart the way forward. I think the masterstroke was when he dealt with the right wing, with the generals, because they were really seriously threatening to set the whole country on fire. But the problem today that we face is in the analysis, a lot of people are using today's eyes to look at what was happening that time, yesterday, which is sometimes unfair, because it was a very dangerous, it was a very, very fraught time that was, you know, the country was dancing at the edge of a precipice.
In fact, I'm glad you made that point. I was actually thinking about that when I was reading the book last night. You know, we've got the, you know, they say 2020 hindsight is 2020 vision. But, you know, I was trying to put myself back into 1994. And of course, it also mentions the assassination of Chris Hani, for example. I mean, if that wasn't a sliding down a razor blade, I mean, what was? I mean, what a critical moment. And then Mandela appearing live on television to actually calm the nation when he wasn't quite yet president.
He was very, very clear about how to assume leadership in those dangerous circumstances. And it was the time when he took over the broadcast and calmed the tempers of the nation when it came to the assassination of Chris Hani. He made a very important point of showing the world, of showing the country, that it was actually a white Afrikaner woman who had helped to the police to capture, to catch, to apprehend and arrest the assassin. Because had that not happened, I think we would have seen a wholly different South Africa today. So he was very understanding of the theater of the moment, and he seized on those moments very, very adroitly.
He was also somehow instinctively the master of timing. I think you even mention it in the book that sometimes he just knew in his gut, now is the time that I must make a decision. And the instance that you mention is when South Africa had to make a choice between Taiwan and China, how he managed to negotiate his way around, which was a very, very prickly problem.
And he did that also very seamlessly without humiliating Taiwan. And he made sure that they understood exactly the problem that he was, or the country was facing with this two-China situation that was prevailing at the time. And at the end of it all, the Taiwanese leader, or the ambassador then who was here, did understand the predicament that South Africa was experiencing, and, you know, understood where Mandela was coming from. So he was very conciliatory. At the same time, he could be very hard when it came to having to make a decision that was impacting on the lives of millions of people.
You also managed to flesh out some of the dynamics between him and de Klerk. I can remember as a photographer in 1994 going to a press conference, and I was right under the desk, and for the first time I actually saw who was in charge. It wasn't de Klerk, that was before the elections, and how Mandela managed to negotiate himself around this, and how he was the boss, he was in control. Amazing, isn't it?
Absolutely. But at the same time, he knew that it was very important for the right wing to see de Klerk as a leader. Otherwise, the whole situation inside the country would not have been resolved. And so he shored de Klerk up. He supported him. He called him a man of integrity to make sure that the design of the new dispensation was not spoiled.
And if one, you know, there's so many things in the book, you know, that one has to have a look at. We've got the days of Madiba in Parliament, the first State of the Nation address, and of course the very moving moments of the final State of the Nation address.
Absolutely, as was also the final address to the ANC's conference in Mafikeng, when he made some very, very important pointers which have got resonance to today.
Indeed, because, I mean, you know, something else that comes off the pages, and you write about it too, is that he was aware that there would be human frailties, that there would be human weaknesses within the ANC. And it seems as if he often went to great pains to ensure that members of the cabinet would stay honest, not only politically, but morally and ethically as well.
Absolutely. And that came through and became a moment of his great distress at the time when there was the pulling out of the National Party from the government of national unity. That was when he realized that the cabinet, the ANC, would have to go it pretty much alone with the help of whatever allies it could muster. And once you are up there on the stage, you have to depend on very, very moral, very, very disciplined leadership. And you can't do it on your own.
That's an interesting point you make, because when I look back at that particular time, I mean, in essence, what was left of the National Party basically handed the ANC a hospital pass, didn't they? Because everybody was relying on a government of national unity to get us through the transition period, and right slap bang in the middle of it, Klerk very petulantly withdraws from it. Leaves the ANC, as I say, with a hospital pass, having to face the music, as it were.
Yes, and he made sure that the National Party understood what had happened, because some of the people, if you remember, who had been in the National Party, when they moved out and out of the government of national unity, some of them then decided to join the ANC. And people like Dick Botha, who had been a very, very instrumental in the brokering of that debacle, especially in Angola. So it's people who came with a lot of experience, and for them to move out, it meant that the ANC had to be left holding the fort alone and depending on as many of the different, agencies as possible.
Then, if we look at Mandela internationally, so many things to so many different people, and again, his amazing loyalty to people like Yasser Arafat, even Gaddafi, and other leaders, in spite of massive pressure from the big bully boys of the world, such as the United States.
Yeah. You know, a very, very short story. I was still in London at the time when Madiba was released in 1990. And I remember when leaders came to see him, and it was a whole gallery of international potentates, leaders from far and wide, mainly because they saw in him an embodiment of their own dreams, really. Yasser Arafat said to me when we went to see him in London, he said to me, "Please tell my brother not to forget us." And Mandela, I don't think, ever forgot the plight of the Palestinian people. Moving on to other circumstances, if you look at his brokering of unraveling that problem that was facing Muammar Gaddafi, you know, in Libya with the Lockerbie bombing, he had to break the UN no-fly zone over Libya and travel from Tunis by road to Tripoli to go and speak face-to-face with Gaddafi to say, listen, you've got to buy in into the United Nations roadmap, otherwise the Americans and the other Western nations would really, really go out of their way to humiliate the Libyans. So he was very conscious of what was happening in other jurisdictions. The same energy he used to deal with the problem that was obtaining in the DRC, with Mobutu going out and Kabila coming in.
That was a difficult one, wasn't it? Because in the book you've actually got the notes that Madiba makes, and Kabila was a troublesome fellow, wasn't he?
Well, he was. He was undisciplined, and Mandela really did not take kindly to indiscipline, nor did he take kindly to people that were discourteous, because these were his own values. He was a very, very courteous person, even in the face of humiliation, and he was also incredibly disciplined.
Mr. Mandlalanga, we could carry on chatting forever about the book Nelson Mandela and Mandlalanga, the author, Dare Not Linger, The Presidential Years. On Free Book Friday, we always ask the guest author to ask a simple question that our listeners can answer, and then the first listener who WhatsApps us gets a free copy. I will ask the question if you want a free copy of Nelson Mandela, Dare Not Linger, The Presidential Years, together with Mandlalanga, who worked on the notes that Nelson Mandela had made after he retired from politics. So I'm going to ask you, the title is Dare Not What? Dare Not What? What is the third word? Nelson Mandela and Mandlalanga, Dare Not. If you can give me that word, the first person to WhatsApp 072-238-0712, 072-238-0712. Is it Dare Not Linger? Is it Dare Not Disturb? Which one? And if you can get the right word, Dare Not What? 072-238-0712. You could win a free copy of Nelson Mandela, The Presidential Years.